Thank you, Casey, for the introduction here, and thanks to the organizing committee for inviting me to come and talk to you today of some of the things we're doing in the lab. So my lab does a lot of research in the early embryonic development in different species. Mostly we work with cattle, but we also do a lot of work with sheep and pigs. And so here are some pictures, some beautiful pictures of embryos that we grow in vitro. I want to mention that we use a lot of artificial reproductive technologies, which are mostly used in our case for research purposes. So stay with me if sometimes I'm a little bit unrealistic for what can be used on the field and for production settings. But today, as I was looking at all the speakers, the lineup of people that we have presenting, I thought I'd present probably more in relation to the previous session in terms of what's the future and how artificial reproductive technologies intersect with genomics to probably deliver a very fast speed genetic progress. So I'm going to go with that. So basically, in terms of genomics, and again, I'm not considering myself a geneticist per se, but we know that now with our capacity to really go and look into the DNA of an animal and characterize or identify the sequence of that DNA and relate that to phenotypes, we have an opportunity to select animals based on their DNA, their genetics, and probably use that to improve our accuracy for predicting the performance that animal will have or the genes that that animal will pass down to the next generation. So basically, we can use that genomics to select animals using these multiple genetic markers in what we call genomic selection. And the way that genomic selection works is you take a population of animals that we call the reference population, in which you measure phenotypes, so you measure performance on these animals, and at the same time you take a DNA sample from this reference population, you look at all the different markers across the genome, and you heard through this conference we have the 50K, so 50,000 markers, the 700,000 markers, and more moving into the whole genome, so sequencing every single one of the letters of the DNA across the 300 billion that are in cattle. So once we have this reference population that may or may not be very good, because we know some of those records are not acquired, we can create a prediction equation. Then using that prediction equation, we can test any animal that we don't really have any information about their phenotype. And so by taking DNA from these candidate animals, apply this equation, and then we can select the best, the ones that are predicted to be the best animals. So the big advantage of this technology is that we can do this as soon as we can get a DNA sample from these animals. And this may mean at calving, so right away the calf is born, we can get a determination of how good or how bad this animal is going to perform in the future or what kind of genes it's carrying that can pass down next generations. Or even, as we're going to see in the next presentations, we can do that at the very early embryo stage if we're using assisted reproductive technologies. Can create a 5-7 day embryo, take a sample, and determine right away whether this is a superior or inferior animal from a genetic point of view, and use that to select that animal for the future. And this capacity of selecting animals with higher accuracy and probably from a larger pool of animals that are subject to this selection, and also by using this at early age in the animal, therefore reducing the generational interval, allows us to improve the progress we are making in terms of genetic gain. And this really, I think, combines with assisted reproductive technology, again, to give you that possibility of higher intensity of selection and also a shorter generation interval. And here, you know, I just put briefly what are the benefits of using this in bulls. And we know, again, you can have a better, more accurate criteria for selecting the bulls you're going to be using in your herd. It also, if you're going to be using AI, that improves the accuracy of those bulls. It shortens the generational interval you have for proven animals compared to having to do progeny testing. It also, indirectly, we benefit from better selecting the dams that will produce those bulls by using genomics. Again, expands the pool of candidates that are going to be subject to this selection. And obviously, it also has some level of risk because current genomic or technologies have different precisions. I understand that, especially in the case of beef production, this may be very related to different breeds. So for some breeds, we may have more precise determinations than others, and that's our considerations you have to do. But overall, it speeds up genetic progress in general. And in the case of the female, it's pretty much the same thing. So it allows to select superior animals within the herd, increases the value of replacement heifers if you do the genomic testing and then you advertise or sell them based on their genetic value. It helps determine more accurate parentage. Alison was talking about some deleterious mutations that genetics and genomics could be a way to identify and help eliminate from a herd or help avoid these recessives to, you know, get together and cause a problem. And then it can be used as a tool to minimize some of these inbreeding problems you may have. But what I want to talk about from now on is that basically this is really maximized if you combine the genomic tools with reproductive technologies. And I want to give you two examples of two industries that have used more or less degree of reproductive technologies. So the first is the dairy industry, and we probably all know this situation, but this is a graph, you know, we have from 1985, and this is now, 2015, and this is a projection up to 2020. And this is milk production per cow. And we can see a very steady increase in production per animal. Here's the number of cows that's predicted to be in milking herds. And here, you know, we notice that it's been decreasing just because the production per animal has been steadily increasing. And we're going to need this to continue going up if we want to feed a growing population. And in the case of the dairy industry, there is multiple factors that help or aided at maintaining that continuous progress, and in part was establishing, you know, very clear selection programs, progeny testing in their system, currently being a very quick adopter and intensive adopter of genomics, and that was always combined with assistive reproductive technologies, very widespread use of artificial insemination, obviously frozen semen, to some level embryo transfer, and as we heard recently, high use of sex semen. So again, assistive reproductive technologies, genetics or genomics, because it really doesn't matter so much. So we have a very high increase in genetic gain. So what are the consequences of not using ARTs? And for this, I'm going to use a slide that I once saw Dr. Seidel here use that has forever, from the very first time, been imprinted in my mind, and I cannot get away from it. And it's a really good representation of an industry that uses selective matings, does a lot of selection in their animals that they use to produce the next the progeny, the next generation, but doesn't use assisted reproductive technologies. You may know what I'm talking about, but this is basically the thoroughbred industry, right? For years, they've been doing specific breedings, selection of animals, and this is the times for winners of the Kentucky Derby, probably their best, you know, phenotype. That's when they want, everybody wants to express their best genetics. And here it's from 1950 up to 2010, and we can add the last 5 years here too. But so 60 years of selection and breeding have taken this industry to really not go anywhere. So except from, you know, secretariat and then one more horse that was under the 2 minutes, but again, hasn't moved. So using assisted reproductive technologies is very important. And we've heard during this conference that AI has great benefits, both not only from a genetic point of view, also from a reproductive point of view. So we can probably beat the bull in many circumstances. So I'm not going to talk about AI. Also, we heard yesterday Dr. Lansom talk about superovulation and embryo transfer, and that's another technology that really can help improve genetic gain. And so in my next slide, and I forgot I had this one, sorry, but I'm going to make a little bit of emphasis on in vitro embryo production, and then I want to take you again to the future of breeding combined with genomics. This is just one example that I have for you in terms of using intensive reproductive biotechnologies combined with genomic selection. So if we consider, you know, we do genomic selection at birth. This is for a female, a heifer calf. And we use sex semen across all of these reproductive technologies. We can start doing superovulation embryo transfer when that heifer hits the 1 year of age. Probably do 3 sessions, get 5 to 7 embryos, as pretty much everybody reports. We're using female sex semen, so transfer those embryos, get about 80% pregnancy rate, so we produce 11 female calves there. At 15 months of age, we can breed this animal, generate one calf by AI, again, sex semen, so it should be a female. And then we can do in vitro fertilization because we can collect oocytes while the animal is pregnant. We can do that from the time we confirm a pregnancy, about 28 days, up to about 5 months of pregnancy. And aspirate eggs, do IVF, transfer those. So if we do 6 sessions of embryo collection, we get about 18 embryos. Again, those are going to be females. We transfer those with about 10 female calves. So from the point of genetic selection, we're taking just one female in our herd, producing a total of 20 replacement female calves, which could potentially be from 10 different bulls. Because at each of these steps, we could be using a different animal. We could do even more than that if in IVF, which is spread the eggs to different bulls. So that means that one animal, 20 replacements. So we could be selecting the very top 5% of our females and basically replenishing or repopulating the whole herd. So again, very, you know, fast speed genetic progress there. So like I said, we talk about AI, superovulation. I just wanted to give you a flavor for IVF or in vitro embryo production. I know Mark will put this so Mark Allen coming talk will put this in context of what's possible today. But I thought I'd share with you how we do IVF in the lab and give you some idea of that. But basically, in vitro embryo production, it's just making embryos in the laboratory in a petri dish. It involves mostly 3 procedures. One is collecting eggs and maturing them, so in vitro oocyte maturation, then doing the fertilization, merging the sperm and the egg to do that, and culturing the embryo to a stage we can put back in a cow, freeze, or so on. And these procedures of in vitro embryo production are really associated, go together with many other biotechnologies such as gamete or embryo cryopreservation, preimplantation genomic selection, and that's going to be one of the topics of the next speaker, and then also cloning animals or even editing genes or transgenesis. I'll touch on this later on. But again, just to go through what it really means to do in vitro fertilization, we typically are going to need two very important materials to do this, and one is the egg from the females. The other is going to be the semen, the sperm from the males. We know sperm is easy to get. You just buy it. It comes in plastic straws. But for oocytes, we normally use two different sources of this. One is go to a slaughterhouse. Here in this area of California, we went to a Cargill slaughterhouse. They kill about 300 cows an hour, about 1,600 a day. So we get a lot of ovaries, so two ovaries per cow. So we can get buckets of ovaries. So you can collect a very large number of eggs. Obviously, the genetics is going to be completely unknown, but it allows efficient production and a very low cost of these embryos. Again, this is what we use in my lab every week to do research. We produce about, 500 blastocysts every week, and sometimes double or triple that. Now, in situations where you want to produce embryos from a specific genetic from a specific animal, we use ovum pickup. So this is a picture of how you get from these ovaries. You aspirate the follicles and you get the egg that's inside. For specific animals, we do ovum pickup by transrectal ultrasonography and follicle puncture. And basically, here is the ultrasound image. You have a follicle, and there is a small guide here. I'm not sure it's clear in the image, but then you aspirate with a needle and you suck up with vacuum the contents, the liquid there that contains the egg, and we can take that quickly to the lab, as it was mentioned, under the right conditions. And we can then take that oocyte, and we have to do a process, the first step with the oocyte maturation. Very often, this is done in a shipping incubator. We're going to see, again, from Mark, how they collect oocytes on the field, put it in an incubator, put it on FedEx, and it will arrive next day to the lab where you can continue with the processing. So the next step is in vitro fertilization, and that it's just putting together the egg and the sperm, and they will do their thing. I have here a small video. I don't know if you can see all these moving dots here. That's the sperm, and this is the egg. That gives you, a relative view of maybe to some level, the importance of the egg and the sperm by their size. But so after fertilizing, we remove these cells. The egg is the black dot here, but we remove the cells outside. And then we put these embryos in culture. So this is a one-cell embryo. Go in the Petri dish inside the incubator. And then the embryo will start to divide in 2, 4, 8 cells and eventually develop into a blastocyst. That's no more than a hollow ball with some liquid inside, cells around, and then this mass of cells in one of the poles. And this, again, this gives you an idea. So these are cows, Each of these is a cow, potentially. And these are, my herd. We have one of those every week. About 500 of them we herd in one of these dishes. So you can freeze those, transfer those, etc. Now, what are some of the advantages of IVF? And I'm not going to give you specific examples or data here, so you may not believe me because I'm not showing the data, but I think the next speakers will do that. But IVF allows you to, again, maximize genetic improvement by increasing the amount of genes that are provided by superior females to the herd. It's not only allowed, genetic improvement from the male side, but this allows to add the contribution of the female side. So you double your genetic gain in a way. It also helps you optimize the use of top semen. So we heard about, $1,500 straws, maybe sex semen, maybe limited quantity amount of semen. We can really optimize that using IVF. I'll show you an example. And then it also provides higher embryo donor flexibility. I mentioned you can do this in a pregnant cow. There's no other way you can get another offspring from a pregnant cow than by IVF. And you can also use this as a reproductive tool, and I'm not going to talk too much about it. So again, standardizing embryo production, IVF allows you to produce more calves per female. And that's only because you can get eggs more frequently compared to superovulation and obviously compared to just AI. Donor flexibility, again, probably Mark will talk about this, but we can start with younger animals, so heifers, potentially or eventually calves, and the age is continuously being pushed to younger and younger animals being subject to IVF. We can use animals that have problems to produce embryos, being that they don't respond to hormonal stimulation or they have some obstruction or abnormalities in their genital tract. We can use pregnant cows, as I said, or we can even use dead animals. So that's what we normally use. All our embryos, our herd, is always produced from dead animals that are killed to produce meat. We take the ovaries afterwards, make some embryos. An animal dies on the field, and you find it quick enough, and that means, I've seen cases of up to 14 hours after death of the animal, you take the ovaries, put it to the right lab, and maybe you get one extra calf from that female. Or castrated animals, if you're castrating them for, increasing their growth rate, or, you can take those ovaries and get a few more calves from those animals. This is what I said, optimizes the use of semen. So if we compare different technologies for AI, we typically 1 to 2 straws will make you one calf. If you use superovulation, it could be 2 to 4 straws that are used in a superovulatory protocol. You end up with 3 to 4 or 5 calves, maybe a 1-to-1 relation. With in vitro production, we normally use 1 straw. We make all 500 embryos, and that's conventional semen. If we're using sex semen, we can fertilize about 500 eggs, maybe get about 200 to 250 embryos, and then from those get about 100 calves. So you really dilute the cost of very high, very expensive semen by using IVF. And that's the present. And again, you're going to hear in the next speakers, and you've already heard through this conference, that AI, superovulation, IVF are standard techniques. Anybody can use it. You just weigh, cost and benefits, and you can implement it everywhere, at least in the U.S. But now I'm going to give you what's my impression for what's coming. And this is really a synergism of genomics and assisted reproductive technologies. And we're going to talk about 2 things. One is what I call in vitro breeding, for maybe lack of a better term. Some people call phylogenetics, but there is so many different concepts for that word that I call it in vitro breeding. And the other is precision breeding. So what do I mean with in vitro breeding? So normally, we have our best bull, best cows. I showed you, and we can do IVF. We can produce hundreds of embryos, right? All these embryos are equally, based on pedigree, they have equal potential genetically. So we can take those embryos, put them in cows, generate some calves. It's going to take 2-3 years until these can contribute to the next generation, right? Pregnancy, maturation, production of gametes. Now, what I propose, or some people have proposed also, is you take these embryos, we get some cells from these embryos that we can isolate in vitro in the dish, and then we take these cells, we select the best, using genomics, select the superior female and male from hundreds or thousands, we may get to 5-10 better cells in this case, and then we use these cells to produce gametes, maybe in vitro, maybe in vivo. And then we use these gametes to do IVF, and again, go back to embryos, and we repeat this circle again and again and again. And here we have a generation, an interval of 3 years. Here we can do this probably in 2-3 months. So in a year, we can do 4 rounds of breeding. So we go 20 years ahead, maybe. Now, is this possible? It sounds like science fiction, and I can tell you right now we cannot do this, but where are we right now? Okay, IVF we can do. How about this step, establishing embryonic stem cells? And embryonic stem cells are very specific types of cells that we've been growing for 30 years in mice, for something like 20 years in humans, and were not available in any other species pretty much until like recently, where our knowledge has increased a lot. We have been applying that more recent knowledge to try to derive embryonic stem cells in cows. And these cells have two big properties. One, they can grow forever in a culture dish. So they will never die or senesce. And then they can go back to embryonic development and contribute to the embryo, to the animal, and probably to the gametes, sperm and egg. So you can, in theory, make sperm from these cells. And so we've done that. The blastid, remember, had that bulb, so we want these red cells here, and those start growing here, and anyway, we can grow these cells. I'm running low on time. So this shows that these are pluripotent, meaning we know we can grow these cells, but then they also have characteristics that will allow these cells to become sperm and egg. One of the ways we know that is we put them in an immunodeficient mice, and they make a tumor called a teratoma. And these tumors have all different kinds of cells. It's like an embryo, but completely disorganized. You know, in natural teratomas, you would find like a tooth, some hair, some glands, some lung, but it's all disorganized. Muscle, so this is cartilage here. It's like a, you know, development going wrong. But that tells you that the cells can make all different tissues, just like the embryo. And also, we can use these cells to do somatic cell nuclear transfer or cloning and at least get embryos. If we transfer these embryos, the hope is they will also make an animal. So we can do this part of the equation. We can establish stem cells, and then, you know, we can select the best ones. This method is very efficient in isolation percentage. So we can do genomic selection on those. And potentially, you know, just exit this circle by cloning from those cells. How about deriving gametes from stem cells? And that's something we haven't been able to do in cows yet. But this is, you know, a report a couple years ago, or a few years ago, in which they took stem cells from a mouse, and they ended up with individuals. It did require some a step where they engrafted these primordial cells back into a mouse, but they got offspring from the stem cells. The same thing, this was through sperm. The same thing was done through oocytes. So they took stem cells. They do all different steps here that you have 2, 3, 5 days each step. Then they graft them in the mouse. They make eggs, and they get pups. So these animals are born from an egg derived from stem cells. So what I say is this is probably coming soon. We're not there yet. It'll be soon. What if you couldn't do this? And I think this is going to be a big barrier. I think we can overcome that again, like I said, by cloning or maybe blastocyst complementation. Sorry, I'm bad with timing and not going to be able to explain much of that. But I think by doing this in vitro breeding, we can really increase that selection intensity. We can really decrease that generational interval, and that will result in a much faster, you know, genetic progress. So precision breeding, I'm going to pretty much skip this, but this means right now, with the current technology, we have the capacity to go through those 300 billion bases in the genome of a cow, pick one that we want to change and change it. So if we don't want the deleterious allele, we can go and change it to a good one. And we're not adding anything, we're not removing anything, we're just changing for a natural for a natural allele, for something that already exists in the population, but doing it very fast by not affecting the genetic background of the animal. And if we were to do just, you know, 20 of those changes on every generation, just changing for a more favorable allele, we can increase the genetic gain, we can double the genetic gain in the next, you know, 20 years that's shown here. And then imagine you combine this with what I proposed before. So we do every generation will take 4 months instead of 5 years. We could really take the system to the very, very maximum exponential of that very quickly. So wait for those embryos to come to your herds sometime. So with that, I'm just going to thank the people in my lab that does the work, and I'm not sure I have any time for taking questions. But.